This is Steve Chandler, and I'm glad to be talking about fear. It's the most interesting and the most valuable concept for forming agreements that I know of. When people understand fear, they have the ability to create agreements with other people so much faster. The first thing I want to talk about is the fear in the other person. As two people try to form agreements together, the other person has a lot of fear. And then, in the second half, which comes up in a few minutes, I want to talk about the fear inside us, my fear. First, let's look at the other person. Whether I'm in a selling situation or a leadership situation, there is fear in the other person as I go into a communication. There always will be to some degree. If I don't understand that, I'm going to have a very hard time creating an agreement. It's all about creating agreements. If I'm a leader, I want my people to agree with me. I want them to agree with me to perform at a higher level, to get some work done that I think needs to be done, to communicate with me differently, to hit better numbers. It's an agreement that I need. The same is true if I'm a salesperson. It's the same process. I need a prospect to agree to something, agree to see me, agree to spend some time with me, agree to purchase from me. It doesn't matter what it is. There's an agreement I'm looking for. Now, there's a reason why the person on the other side, my prospect or my employee or anyone in my life that I'm talking to, will push back and try not to agree with me. And once we understand that reason, we have the ability to create agreements so much faster. The answer is fear. I want the person on the other side to be fearless, to be totally relaxed, to be comfortable with coming up with this agreement with me. In a total, benevolent, wonderful, relaxed, enjoyable comfort zone. That's where I want that person. Now, most people who try to create agreements with other people actually cause the fear in the other person to get worse and worse as the conversation goes on. Let's take a look at that phenomenon. How do we push people's buttons, make them afraid, make them act angry or assertive or defensive in such a way that I cannot reach an agreement with that person? We actually do that. We're the ones who create most of the objections in a selling process, and we're the ones who create in the mind of our employee a resistance, a defensiveness about getting done what I want that person to get done. We do that. They don't do it. We do it. If we can see that, we can create agreements in a much more comfortable way. We can create agreements in a much faster way. Let's look at a situation right now with a person coming home at the end of work. Picture this. You're coming home to your partner or someone in your household. Let's say it's your partner, your friend, your roommate, doesn't matter. You come home and you start to say things. You might say, "Oh, it's a wonderful day today. It's a lovely day. Wasn't it a great day? Beautiful day, right?" And the person looks at you and says, "Well, actually, it was kind of hot today." "Oh, okay. Hey, you know what? The Suns are on tonight. We can watch some basketball. I think that would be a good idea to watch some basketball." And the person says, "What? You haven't had enough sports? That's all we do is watch sports." "Oh, okay. Hey, did you see our kid's report card? He did pretty well, didn't he, this period?" "Oh, he didn't do nearly as well as I thought he could do. I mean, he can do so much better than that, it isn't funny." "Oh, yeah, right. And so, a funny thing is happening here. What's happening is, no matter what you're saying, you're getting back the opposite. You're getting disagreement in subtle ways, and sometimes not so subtle ways. Why is that? Why do people tend to disagree with us and push back at us whenever we assert something, whenever we put something out there as a fact or an opinion? Why is that offensive to people? Why do people need to disagree? And this is a very key point here in coming up with agreements with people. If we understand thoroughly from the start what it is inside another person that drives them not to agree with me, then we're home free. We're truly home free. Here's what's going on. If I want an agreement with another person, I will be very careful about asserting my opinion, about putting something out there, about talking about facts, benefits, situations, and throwing things out there. Because that will always cause defensiveness, always cause a pushing back in another person because of the fear. Here's why. If the other person agrees with everything I say, they feel vulnerable, they feel afraid, they feel worthless, they feel like they don't add anything to the conversation. If I come home and I say, well, it was a beautiful day, I agree. Hey, it'll be fun to watch the suns tonight, I agree. Hey, our kid did pretty well in the report card, I agree. Pretty soon the person is terrified that all they bring to this relationship is a rubber stamp. They're just saying, I agree, you're right. I agree, you're right, I don't add any value, I don't bring anything, I'm not even here, I'm not even visible, I'm not even worth it, there's no worthwhileness to who I am, you're right, you're always right, I'm always wrong, this is a total imbalance, and people feel afraid, so they push back. Now this happens when we're selling somebody something. Someone walks in the store, and we say, hey, you've come in at a good time. This is really a great month to buy a car. Now that person feels afraid. So that person says, well, not really. At least not for me. In fact, this was a month in which I had to make a couple really big tax payments. This is a worse month for me to buy a car, really, when you bring it up that way. When you put it in that context. Yeah, it's a terrible month. Now what has just happened here? I, the salesperson, have asserted something. I've said something. I've put it out there. The other person has pushed back with something else because the other person is afraid. People are afraid they're going to lose their money. They're going to lose their time. They're going to lose their value. They're afraid. So how do I create an agreement in such a way that the other person's buttons are not being pushed and they're not afraid and they're not pushing back? By the way, we don't know they're afraid. Most people don't know that they generate so much fear in the other person, because when the other person pushes back, it looks like strength. It looks like, well, that's a feisty person. Well, there's a person who knows their own mind. There's a person who's not going to get pushed around. People don't understand that we've got fear at play here. All right, every time I assert something, I put something out there, it is interpreted as me trying to steamroller, me trying to be the person who brings all the value to the conversation, me trying to dominate, me trying to be the impressive, powerful person in the relationship, and pretty soon the other person starts pushing back. And it doesn't matter what I'm saying. I could come home and say, well, looks like our son's report card wasn't all that good. I think he could do better. Now the other person now says, well, actually that was the best report card he ever had when you look back at his other report cards. Actually that report card was very good. Now here's the same person who would have said to me, if I said, what a wonderful report card, she would have said back to me, well, I know he can do better. Why? Why does the person contradict what I'm saying? Why does the person say, this really isn't a good month to buy a car for me? Why? The answer is fear. People don't want to be dominated. People don't want to be a rubber stamp. They don't want to say, I agree, you're right again, you're wonderful, you're right, you have all the answers, take all my money, take all my time, I'm helpless, I'm vulnerable. They don't want to be put in that position, so they push back. And it's very subconscious. It's not deliberate. It's very subconscious. When we say something to another human being in a situation where we're looking for an agreement, if we want to push that person away, and awaken all their fears and get them to start pushing back and disagreeing, all we have to do is start giving opinions, asserting things, listing benefits, telling them why it's a good idea, making a presentation. Telling is not selling. This is also true if I'm a leader. Let's say I wanted one of my employees to get forms turned back to me in a more timely manner. If I talk to that employee in an assertive way where I come out and just say, you know what, I need to talk to you. I didn't get those forms on time. You know what happens? Defensiveness, fear, because the employee is afraid of losing his job or her job. And so the employee says, well, you know what, there was no way I could get him back to you on time because our computer system was down for 2 days. Actually, our people did pretty well given what was going on here at the store. We did very well, as a matter of fact. As a matter of fact, we're doing better than can be expected down here. Now, what's just happened? My employee is defending what went on because my employee is afraid that he will be judged poorly, that he will be asked to leave the company because he can't get his forms in on time. And all I've done, the big mistake I've made, is I've put something out there. I've pushed his button. I've awakened the fear and caused him to push back. And so now I push back again. This is what happens in most leader-employee conversations. The employee pushes back, says, this is why it's impossible for me to do what you've just told me I should have done. And then I push back and I say, well, you know, that computer system was down at another store across town and they got theirs in on time. And now the employee is more frightened, even more afraid. So the employee says, yeah, but they've got a bigger staff than we do. We're understaffed, and the computer is down. The more I push, the more they push back, the more defensive they are, and the less likely they're going to agree to turn those forms in on time next week. They're not going to agree to do that because I have pushed them away. The same thing is true in a sales situation. Salespeople do this all the time. They walk up to someone or they call up someone and they start telling stuff about their company, about their product. They start pushing. And they get pushed back and they don't understand. They get objections and they don't understand. They get people saying, well, I don't need that right now. Or we're covered. Or a friend of mine already does that for me. I've got an uncle who takes care of my insurance and I don't really need to look at insurance right now. And they're not even telling the truth. Why do they do that? And the answer is this. If I've given them the impression that I think they need insurance, and I've put that opinion out there, they're afraid that I'm going to take advantage of them, I'm going to take some of their money, that I'm superior to them, that I've got secret knowledge that they don't have, and they're going to push back. And they're going to say, I don't need it. This happens every time we push, they get pushed back. It'll happen every single time. And so the answer is this. I want to understand that if I want an agreement with another human being, I don't give them things to disagree with. I don't push out there. I'm not offensive. I don't go on the attack with facts and opinions and figures and assertions. I don't do that. I ask gentle questions, and everything I communicate with them lets them know that they are in charge of this decision, because if I don't do that, I'm taking their power away, and they're going to argue. In the end, they have to decide anyway. In the end, they have to be the person who makes up their mind to agree and do this, even if it's an employee of mine. I can't physically force my employee to do something. They have to agree, in the end, that it's in their rational self-interest to do it. If I try to achieve that agreement by pushing and pushing and asserting and arguing, and I come away from the conversation thinking, well, this is a problem person. This person is so hard to talk to. This person always has reasons why they can't do it. Even if they do it, they always give me all these reasons why they can't do it. Now, do you know who's causing that? The leader is causing that. And when sales prospects come back and say, I don't have the budget, I've got to run this past somebody else, I don't have time to see you. In order for that display to be put in, you need to talk to someone else. I don't have the ability, I don't have the authority, you'll have to come back next month. We're not doing any of that this month. You know why people say that? They've been pushed. They never say that if they haven't been pushed. If they haven't felt some kind of fear, they don't say that. If they've been honored, they don't say that. And so the way to take fear away from people is to honor their own decision-making capacity and to ask them gentle questions and allow them to keep making the decisions as we go. The way to get in agreement with someone is to not give them anything to push back at. I want to understand human fear. I want to really get it. People are afraid of losing their time. They're afraid I'm going to take a lot of their time, and they're going to lose their time during the day. They're afraid they're going to lose their money. And people I'm leading, they're afraid they might lose their job if I don't approve of them. So anything I say or assert, that if they just say, okay, you're right, yeah, they're afraid of that position. So I don't want to put them in that position. What I want to do is ask questions, and if I do say something that asserts something, I want it to honor them, so they won't disagree. Even if I say something simple, like, that's a really nice tie you've got on, all of a sudden, I've put the power in their court. I've honored them. They're thinking, oh, well, thank you. Thanks a lot. I got this. My wife got it for me, actually. And so now they're thinking, hey, I've got a tie that he likes. He wishes he had it. Score one for me. So all of a sudden, they're starting to relax. They don't have the sensation that you're trying to overwhelm them, overpower them. Now, I might ask a gentle question. Is there anything I can show you, or would you like me to just sort of stay out of your way while you look? Now, that's a gentle question that honors their decision-making capacity. I don't say something like, I noticed you're looking at that car right now. They're on sale. You'll never get a better deal than you can get right here. You know what they're going to say? Hey, you know what? I don't need that car. Hey, you know what? I don't even want that car because we need a family car. That car's too small. Now, maybe that might not even have been true, but they pushed back at me because I asserted something. Now, what if I asked the question? I saw you looking at that car over there. Have you ever had a car or anything like that? What did you did? What did you think of it? What was your opinion of it? How'd you like it? See, I want to honor them every step of the way. And I want them to tell me what they need for an agreement. And I want to tell them I'll do everything I can to get that for you. If I take that approach, either with an employee or someone I'm trying to get an appointment with or time with or someone I'm trying to sell something to, I'll be welcomed into their lives all the time, over and over again. But the minute I start doing anything like correcting what they say, making some bold statement, someone walks into a store, for example, and they pick up a can of oil, and I say, you know what? For 30 cents more, you could get twice as much. And here I'm asserting something to them, and I'm stating it as fact. Psychologically, they feel beat up. They feel like, oh, I'm stupid. I was about to do something stupid. And you know what they say? Many times they'll say this. Oh, that's all right. Even though it's more cost-effective to get the larger can, I'll just get this. This is all I really need for now. I don't need that. I won't use that. That'll go to waste, even though I know it's more cost-effective. They might not even be telling the truth. But what are they doing? They're pushing back. They're reasserting themselves. They need to reestablish the balance in this relationship. They can't have you be the expert, making them look foolish and stupid. And I'll tell you, 8 salespeople out of 10 do that. They think they're being informative. They think they're educating. And what they're doing is they are intimidating people up and down the line. And the people are pushing back and telling them things like, no, I don't need that now. Thanks. No, thank you. I don't want that. No, I'm not even going to drive a car from now on. I'm just going to fly airplanes. I'm going to walk. I'm going to walk the earth like Cain. I won't have a car, so I won't need more of that. They'll make stuff up. And they'll make it up because they feel pushed. They feel backed into a corner with all these questions. I don't want to back anybody into a corner. I want to keep giving them the power. I want to say, you know what? We've got something larger. I don't know. You probably just want that, so that's fine. But if you wanted a little more, it would only be 30 cents extra. So you've got that option, and that's totally up to you. I want to say your power, your decision, you're the one, you're the person. I'm honoring you today. I'm not giving you all this information that paints you into a corner, that makes you look stupid. And salespeople do that without even realizing it, and so do leaders. Leaders make all these assertions, they make all these confrontations, and they end up in long, drawn-out, difficult negotiations with their employees, and they scratch their heads, and they can't figure out why their employees are not more agreeable. They can't figure it out, and you know the answer? It's them. They're the reason. They're pushing every step of the way instead of gently welcoming someone into the agreement with questions, with options, with nothing but remarks and invitations that honor the other person. The strongest person in the world will give up his ego and give up her ego prior to going into an agreement conversation with someone else. Honor the other person, and the other person will walk through walls for that person. I wanted to make one final point about the fear that's there in the buyer or in the employee or in the person that I want to get an agreement with. These days, in our society today, we live in a totally oversold society, a totally overcommunicated society. We receive over 1,000 sales messages a day. We get them when we wake up on the clock radio that comes on. We get them everywhere. They're in the newspaper, billboards, the side of trucks. We relax to watch a ball game, and we think we're getting away from it all, and we're watching a ball game, and at least no one can sell us anything right now. And we're watching it on TV, and somebody hits a double, and the announcer says, "Ah, there's a Burger King Coca-Cola double hit by Derek Jeter today." And so all of a sudden we're getting sold inside of that, or else we try to get away from it all by reading a novel. I'm reading a mystery. I'm relaxing on the beach. I'm reading this mystery. And then I get to the last chapter and I think, boy, what a great book. I wish it wouldn't have ended. And then I turn the page and I see, wait a minute, what's that? It's chapter one for this guy's next book. And so I start reading and I think, wow, I want that book. And here I'm being sold the next book while reading this book. So I can't even get away to the beach with a paperback mystery without being sold something. And what's happened out of this is we've become very, very, very sales resistant. Anything that starts to sound like somebody's selling me something, all of a sudden I'm very practiced at saying, you know what? No, thank you. We'll talk later. No, don't need that. Nope, 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 no. I can't give you my time. I'll get back to you later. I'll call you next month, 6 months from now. We don't have a budget now. And I get all these excuses. I'm practiced at them. I just want you away. I'm afraid. I'm fearful. And when we understand this fear in another person, we invite them in. We help them. We're there to serve. We're there to help. We're non-invasive, non-intrusive. And we want to honor their opinions and their decisions. And when we take that position and we don't assert things, even when the person is incorrect, we don't correct them. Not right then, because that's just another form of saying, ah, my facts are better than yours. If a buyer comes in and says, well, I know across the street they've got lower prices than you do. And let's say that I know for a fact that's not true. Do I say, ah, not true. Our prices are 10% lower than theirs. Well, I might be accurate, but what have I done? I have made this person look ridiculous. I've embarrassed this person. I've made the person look like an idiot. What else could I do? Do I lie? No, I could say, hey, you know, that's very interesting. Thanks for bringing that in. A lot of people who buy, they never even take the time to check out prices or compare. And also, I'm surprised by that because usually our prices are lower than theirs. As a matter of fact, we have a commitment to have our prices always be lower than theirs whenever possible. So I'm going to check into that. Thanks for bringing that up. I don't like the fact that we're priced higher than they are. I really want to thank you for that. Can I ask you a question? If I can get the price back down below where theirs is. Is that of interest to you? Is that one of your buying criteria or not? Well, yeah, I mean, if you can get it down to theirs, I'm more interested. Okay, so let me see what I can do. What else are you looking for? What do you look for when you look for a car? Help me out here, because I'm here to serve you. You see what that was? That was a way of honoring the information, even though I knew it was incorrect. I want to honor him for bringing the information in. The minute I start to push superior information on a person, whether I'm a leader or a salesperson, I've lost that person. Because I've pushed all the fear buttons. I don't know why. I don't know that I did it. And I would say that 8 salespeople out of 10 don't know they do this, and 8 leaders out of 10 don't know they're doing this all the time in their conversations. They are triggering fear in the other person. When you understand human fear, you rise to the very top in leadership, in sales, in management, any complex human communication position. You rise to the top when you understand the fear in the other person. Now let's look at the other side of the coin. Equally as important is the fear in me. Because if I have fear, it's going to cause those real irrational, unknowledgeable triggers that get other people afraid. I'm going to start doing stupid things and crazy things and threatening things and things that cause the sale to go away or cause the agreement to go away. Fear is 99% caused by lack of preparation. That's really what it is. If you listen to people and you hear them talk about something they're afraid to do, they'll quite often say, I'm just not prepared to do that. You say, you know, we're all going to go skydiving this weekend. And someone's like, you know what? I am absolutely not prepared to jump out of an airplane at X thousand feet just for the fun of it. I'm not prepared to do that. I'm not prepared to go into the jungle alone without a weapon. I'm not prepared to walk into that meeting and talk to that CEO face to face. I mean, I'm 28 years old, and that guy's 60, and he's been around the block a million times. He will eat me up. I'm not prepared to do that right now. I want to talk to his gatekeeper. I want to talk to his assistant. I'm not prepared to walk in and talk to him. So if you hear how people talk about things they're afraid to do, you can find the key to how to eliminate fear inside of me in a step-by-step way. The real key here is preparation. Because what I want is to be prepared. I want to feel prepared. And if I feel prepared, the fear in me is almost entirely gone. I remember when I first started giving seminars, I was terrified. I mean, my biggest fear was talking in front of groups. And I had it ever since I was a kid. When I was a child, I never gave book reports. I would be absolutely unable to give book reports. I mean, my heart would be pounding, my throat would be dry, my knees would be shaking, my hands would be sweating. And I really thought I was going to pass out and lose my life. I would negotiate with teachers. And I would say, you know what, I'll give you 3 written reports instead of an oral report. I can't get up in front of the room. And then later in life, I had the same fear, just horrible fear. If I knew, even I had to give a little talk in front of a small group, even if I could sit down doing it, I'd be worried for days. And I'd call and I'd say, is there anybody else who can give this? And could I write it and pass it out? Could I record it and have somebody play it with maybe slides of my face, and I'd be somewhere else, and I just couldn't do it. And what I realized after a while is I wasn't prepared to do it. And I thought, if I'm going to go into this work where I do leadership training and sales training and the things that I love and I'm the most passionate about, then somehow I've got to overcome this stage fright. It's just got to be done. And I remember a friend of mine suggested I sign up for an acting class, which I did. And I was really scared because everyone else in the acting class was someone who had been on stage before somewhere, even if it was some amateur production or a local community theater production. When we first got together for this class, even though it was kind of like a 101 beginner's class in the evening, everyone was talking about, oh, I saw you in Fiddler last month. You were great, and people were, and I was just thinking, oh my gosh, I can't even talk in front of a group. And here these people are trading war stories about all these great parts they've played, and I was just terrified. And the first assignment was to deliver a monologue from memory, to memorize this monologue from some great play and stand up in front of the whole group of actors and deliver it and have the teacher and the actors critique you. And I thought, my gosh, there's just no way I'm going to be able to do this. And then I realized from what I'd been studying in human achievement that preparation is the key. The reason people are afraid to do things is they don't feel prepared to do it. They feel underprepared, woefully underprepared to do it. And so the answer has to be in what I now call over-preparation. What if I were over-prepared? What would that do to my fear? So I began to ask myself a question. How could I over-prepare for this monologue? And so I started practicing it and practicing it. And then I started giving it in front of my kids. And then I'd give it in front of someone else. And I'd call up a friend. Can I do this monologue in front of you? And I'd give it in front of them. And I'd think, okay, what else would scare me to give it? And I'd give it in front of a couple other people. And I'd give it again and again, and I prepared for it, and I practiced it. Now, the night that I had to deliver it in front of the actors, these other actors had kind of barely memorized theirs. And, you know, we're actors. We don't have to work too hard on this class. And they would stand up before me, and they'd give theirs. And I could tell they were a little scared. I could hear their voice sort of fluttering, and I could hear their breath being taken in like that. And I thought, well, these people are really scared. And I remember in my own mind, you know what? I've given this monologue about 200 times already. I can't generate any fear. I'm trying to feel some fear. And when the class leader, the teacher called on me, would you give yours now? I remember in the back of my mind, and this is weird, it's perverse, it's unusual, but I remember a little voice said to me, showtime. And I thought, what? Showtime? I'm afraid of talking in front of groups. And I got up, and I delivered it, and I was calm, and I boomed it out, and the people were actually pretty surprised. And so this works. When I was a little kid, preparation was the answer. I played Little League baseball, and as we moved up into the Babe Ruth League ranks, we started facing some pitchers who were really fast. We were really afraid to stand up and face them. I mean, the ball just came racing, and then my friend said to me, hey, what if we were really prepared to do this? And I said, what do you mean? He said, look, he took this little tiny wiffle ball thing. I don't know if he used the word prepared, but I'm trying to make a point here. He took this little wiffle ball, like a golf ball that our fathers used, but it had holes in it. It was plastic, so our fathers could hit this golf ball out in the backyard. And it was a little plastic ball, so they could practice their chipping and not lose the ball. And he took me out to the mound at a practice field, and he said, stand up at the plate. And he came in about a third of the way in from the mound, and he said, try to hit this. And he threw it as hard as he could. And it's this little tiny thing. It just came whizzing in so much faster than anything we would face in Babe Ruth League baseball. We both started laughing. I said, I can't hit that. And he said, yes, you can. Keep trying. Again and again and again, he would throw the pitch in. Pretty soon, I got accustomed to the rhythm, and pretty soon, I could hit it. The first game I played after that, I got up to the plate, and the ball was pitched in, and it looked like a beach ball. I mean, it just came in so slowly. And I remember thinking, what? What is this guy doing, trying to let me get a home run? And I hit the ball square, and it went over the fence. It was the first and only home run I ever hit in Babe Ruth. And I thought, that's it. I mean, when I looked back on that, that was it. If I have a tough call to make, if I have a difficult conversation, a confrontation, somebody I have to fire, or else tell them I'm going to fire them if they don't turn it around, anything like that, preparation is the answer. If I practice in the car, if I practice in my mind, if I practice with other people, if I really feel prepared, I've thought this through 1,000 times, I'm really ready, I've got good questions to ask, I'm so ready to make this presentation, to talk to this person, I don't care how intimidating they are, I've already talked to him a million times in my mind and in the car and in front of the mirror. Preparation eliminates fear. We only fear what we don't understand. We only fear what we haven't had any experience with. That's what we fear. Emerson used to say, courage, the greater part of courage, is having done it before. And we don't have to wait to actually do it. We can do a simulation of it. We can do a practice of it. And the fear goes away. I can promise you it does. A lot of people in leadership positions and in all kinds of major important positions in companies and other organizations wrestle with this question of fear, anxiety, nervousness. I mean, they have a big conversation coming up, a big meeting with the boss, or they have somebody intimidating to talk to. Finally, the doctor has let me in. I'm going to talk to this important doctor about something, and perhaps he'll buy some of my product or at least listen to me about it for the first time. And all of this fear that I think is part of my personality, all of this fear that I think comes from my childhood or comes from who I am or something permanent in me, is lack of preparation. That's all it ever is. And if I can understand that, then I have the magic key. I really have the formula if I'm willing to do it. Any difficult upcoming situation where I'm going to be talking to somebody, I'm going to be confronting somebody, I'm going to be interacting with somebody that I'm a little intimidated by, I have the ability to go over it ahead of time with myself, or perhaps sit down with someone else and say, you know what, I'm about to talk to so-and-so. Let me run some of these ideas past you. I intend to say this. I'm thinking about that. I'm going to ask him this. What do you think? Why don't you play the part of that person and let me be me and tell me what you think? Now, I can practice this in my car. I can practice it in front of the mirror. I can do it over and over. I'll promise you one thing. The more I do it, the more prepared I feel. The more prepared I feel, the less fear I feel. That's where fear comes from. A deep sense, I'm not prepared to do this. I'm not prepared to jump off this board this high up over the water. I'm just not prepared to do it. Now, I would be prepared if I jumped off a small board and then a little higher board and then a little higher board. I would be prepared if I prepared. Fear goes away with preparation. I want to tell you a final story. Some of you have asked me about this story before because it was in Reinventing Yourself. And some of you have heard it, some of you haven't. Just listen to it differently now. Most people who hear the story love the story, and they think it's about going for it. They think it's about really making a courageous leap when you didn't want to. And it's really not that at all. If you listen, it's about preparation and the relationship between preparation and fear. If I've got two fearless people, the person on the other side not afraid of me because I'm not pushing any buttons, and me not being afraid at all because I'm well prepared, agreements happen, sales happen, all kinds of wonderful things happen. Now, here's the story that I wanted to tell you. A number of years ago, when my daughter Stephanie was in junior high school, I remember that she had a place in the talent show, and she was going to sing a song in the talent show by Mariah Carey called Hero. And a hero comes along, and it was a beautiful song. And she was worried, and she was nervous and scared. She had a beautiful voice. My daughter Stephanie had a really nice voice, but she was scared, and she said, you know, I'm going to be so nervous. I'm going to be so scared standing up in front of all those people. It's going to scare me. And I just wish I hadn't even signed up for this. And I said, you know what? There's a way around that. There's a way to not have that fear really scare you. And she said, what is it? I said, preparation. You know what you can really do here is practice it. The more you practice the song, the less afraid you'll be. So one of the things I recommend that you do is that you sing the song over and over, and every time you sing it, put a little mark down until you're so sick of the song. You just, what's the deal with this? I mean, I'm sick of this. I've sung it so many times. Where's the show? I wish it was tonight. Get this over with. The more you do it in your mind, the more you do it with the pretend audience in front of you, the more anxious you are to do it in front of the real audience. You take the fear away with preparation. And so she did it, and I remember night after night I could hear her downstairs, and she was singing with the record, and then she had her little tape that she could sing without the record and just sing with the background. And she was singing it over and over, and she'd mark down with little stick figures how many times she sang. And she said, "Dad, I've sung it over and over and over and over." And I said, "Yeah, I can hear you singing it, and it sounds great, and it sounds really good." And it sounded nice. She was hitting the notes and everything. But there was something about it while she was singing it. I could tell she was no longer afraid to sing it. She was relaxed into it. But still, at the same time, there was something about the song that was not quite exciting. It wasn't like her when she's really having fun. And I thought, I wonder what I could do. And so I went out and I rented a video. Actually, I purchased this video, come to think of it. And it was a video of Janis Joplin. And Janis Joplin was singing at the Monterey Pop Festival. And I don't know if any of you have ever seen that video. It's really quite remarkable. But it was when Janis Joplin was singing Ball and Chain. And she was just absolutely incredible. I mean, she gave so much of her heart and soul to that song. And the sweat coming down and the tears. And it's just a remarkable performance. And it really illustrated what happens when a person gives so much of themselves to the music. And I said, "Stephanie, I want you to watch this. And I'm not going to tell you to sing like this because that would be absurd, but I just want to show you what's possible for a singer during a performance and put it in the back of your mind." And so we watched it, and it was really stunning. And Stephanie's jaw kind of dropped, and wow, that was amazing. And so I didn't think much more of it, and she kept preparing and practicing, I didn't think anything more of the Janis Joplin video or anything like that. And we went to the talent show that night, and this one girl came up and sang, and then these guys, and then there's a little band, and then it was Stephanie's turn. And she came up there, and she looked really great. She had a black dress on and high heels, and the background music started, and she came out there with her microphone, and the first verse she sang very nicely. She didn't look scared. She looked a little tentative, and she sang it very nicely. She was right on pitch. It sounded quite nice. And then the second verse started coming around, and all of a sudden something happened, and I don't know what it was. There was just something. I could see it in her eyes. I could see it in the way she was stomping her foot. But all of a sudden, for some reason, she crossed some kind of invisible line, and I could tell she didn't care anymore about us, about the people in the audience, about the other acts. And in my mind, I said to myself, "Oh my gosh, she's going for it. She's really going for it." And Stephanie, she started singing, and her voice got louder and louder and louder, and she kept stepping forward and forward and hitting that high heel shoe on the stage. And her voice was just like, "I don't care about any human in the world." And her voice just filled the place up, and people were on their feet. I mean, grown-ups were on their feet. And she sang the chorus, and a hero comes along, and people were up there. And at the end, I can't believe it. People were just cheering, and I had tears in my eyes. And I said, "My God, she went for it." She just went. At some point, she went for it. And everybody was staring at each other in the audience like, "What was that? What was that?" And the lesson to me in my life was, there's a real connection. If I've prepared enough, I take myself to a level where I can go for it. I can go somewhere I've never gone before because I'm so confident in having been to where everyone expects me to go. That I can nail. That I've already done. Now, watch me.